Did you ever ask yourself what it would have been like if Michael Bay had directed Scarface? No, of course you haven't. But you know who has? Michael Bay. And that's how Pain and Gain became the number one movie in America this week, featuring Keeley Lefkowitz of the movie Pain and Gain.
The number one movie in America.
Movie in America.
Movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
It is the number one movie in America. My name is Sean Collier, and I'm here with two people I wouldn't really mind being on a submarine with. Like, they're, you know, it wouldn't be that bad. Here's Robin Hitchcock.
Hi there.
And Camila Adams.
If I believe that I deserve it, then the universe will serve it.
Oh, that's... That's nice. So, listen, a couple of updates right off the bat. Robin gave me headphones, so I won't do that stuttering Bluetooth interference thing I did during last week's episode, hopefully.
Fingers crossed.
Right. And we'll get to it a little bit later, but for the first time ever, thanks to Camila's efforts, we're talking to someone from the movie we're reviewing.
In this movie. This is crazy. This is amazing.
Camila, so, how did this happen?
Okay, so apparently, so the young lady who plays Christina Furtin, also known as the Porn King's wife in Pain and Gain, she, Keeley Lefkowitz, apparently grew up with my husband. Her parents and his parents were really good friends, but they, you know, lost touch over the years. But yeah, so Dan reached out to her and was like, hey, we're watching your movie, Pain and Gain. And she's like, that's awesome. He's like, you want to do my wife's podcast? She's like, of course. And so here we
Respect.
Are. Right.
Let's begin drawing exclusively from the movies that feature someone one of us has a personal connection to. Can we identify that?
I think that would be, I think I could probably do that.
Yeah.
I think I could probably get at least 10.
Okay, great.
I know a shockingly small number of famous people. I feel like friend of Arcade, Kevin McDonald, is the only one. And I think the only number one movie in America he was in is Lilo and Stitch. And they're not even sure that that is a number one movie in America. So
I'm sure it had been.
Maybe Galaxy Quest. I don't know.
I could get Tom Atkins, but are any of his movies the number one movie in America? Like, Halloween 3 certainly wasn't. Mm. Maybe The Fog was?
I know Josh Stewart, and I know that he was in one of the Batman movies. I think The Dark Knight Rises, whichever one Tom Hardy was in. So I know I'm pretty sure I could get him, and I'm pretty sure that was a number one movie.
Well, I think we just start asking everyone who is in all of these movies on Twitter, they might be bored.
Right.
We saw that Gal Gadot video. Clearly celebrities are bored.
There's a fantastic piece on Vulture that aligns celebrities' coronavirus responses on like the D&D character chart. Okay. So it's like Gal Gadot is lawful or chaotic evil, I think.
Oh
chaotic
my God.
Neutral. I don't know. One of those.
Now she is because she started singing Imagine, right?
Yeah.
And they started doing the whole thing. Yeah, I saw a thing, I think the Reductress or Bitch.com or something, they rated a bunch, like the worst and the best celebrity responses. And they're like, if another celebrity doesn't sing at us for the rest of our lives, it'll be too soon.
I agree.
I mean, that has really stretched my love of Gal Gadot because, like, I want to be like, it's nice that you're being nice,
right?
But like, man, was that just feel weird and icky.
I got so much secondhand embarrassment off the first, like the first time someone came in a completely different key, I was like, hard pause, I refuse.
Well, back to Pain and Gain, since it is our first special guest episode, we should probably talk about the film.
Yeah.
it's Camila up for the 60-second recap this week. This is a very Camila-centric episode, and we're all excited.
All right. I didn't really practice this, so hopefully this goes well.
Doing it, we call that Robin style.
Yeah.
And go.
Mark Wahlberg is Daniel Lugo, and he believes in fitness. After attending a self-help seminar, he decides he's a doer and deserves more in life. So he convinces his juicehead buddy Adrian and recently born-again Christian Paul to dress up as ninjas and kidnap Victor, the super-rich owner of Schlotsky's Delis. They hold and torture him for 30 days, making him sign over all his money, his houses, his stocks, you know, all that rich guy shit. They wreck his car, blow him up, run him over, but he does not die. The cops don't believe Victor's story, so he hires a PI to crack the case. The boys are living the good life. Daniel starts a neighborhood watch, Paul develops quite the coke problem, and Adrian boos up with his erectile dysfunction nurse. Paul hits rock bottom hard and convinces the boys to do another job, so they choose a porn king as their next victim. During the shakedown, Daniel loses his cool, accidentally kills him. Shit goes sideways. There's blood and bodies, and Adrian can't find his dog. Bodies get chopped up and barbecued. The wheels are falling off, y'all. Cops finally know what's up and arrest Adrian and Paul while Daniel goes off to close Victor's secret bank accounts. But Victor gets his revenge by running Daniel down with his car. There's a trial. Paul happily goes back to prison for 15 years while Adrian and Daniel get sentenced to life. And all of this is based on a true story.
So close, but no.
I was on the edge of my seat. I thought you might get it.
A minute six. That's all right. You're more invested. You're understandably more invested time around.
Yeah, so much that goes on in this movie.
It is. There are a lot of things. I would like to point out that I made all of my notes and my rating before we knew that Keeley would be joining us, so I was not influenced to like it more.
Excellent.
But my first reaction was like, I don't know if this is good or not. Like, it's watchable, and there's things I enjoyed about it, and then there were some things I really didn't like about it, and they're almost in perfect balance.
Okay.
Like, the cast is good, it's got, you know, a look and a story and some really interesting sequences, but also it just feels kind of icky and indulgent in a lot of ways.
As most Michael Bay films do.
Right. So
I hated this movie, and I feel so bad that we have a cast member appearing on our episode, and I truly was, because Camila had recorded the interview by the time I watched the movie, so I was like, desperately trying to find the good in this movie and just utterly failing. I find it so vile.
Oh, wow. I can't wait for you to get into that.
Everything about it made me feel gross. And also, it's 1,000 years long.
It is long.
It is a long film. It doesn't need it.
Lawrence of Arabia.
They could have shaved about 20 minutes off of it. There was a point I'm like, spoiler, I enjoyed it. Because, okay, I mean, it kind of played to a lot of my, you know, just like silly stuff that I enjoy. And a dark comedy, a good dark comedy, man, that'll get me right there.
Okay. I also want to say that I fully conflated this movie with Get Hard.
Yeah.
So
isn't that the one with Kevin Hart and Will Ferrell training for prison?
Correct.
Yes.
Yes.
That's very different.
Is it, though? It's like a buddy comedy that has a fitness angle. This one's just a buddy dramedy crime saga.
Well, my question, you know, Camila, you just said it's a dark comedy. Was this a comedy? Like, I couldn't make up my mind. Like,
IMDb calls it a comedy. I laughed. And yeah. I didn't even like it, and I laughed. So yeah. I do think it should be considered a comedy.
But I think I was thinking of it as a comedy, even as I was watching it. And then at the end, when spoiler, it's like they killed several people and then were sentenced to death. I was like, so not a comedy then. Like, yeah. By definition, not a comedy.
Well, it's a dark comedy, like Very Bad Things.
Yeah.
I mean, it messes with me because, you know, it's a dark comedy. I laughed throughout it, but it's also like, this is based on a true story. Like, real people lost their lives. Like, I feel real bad about a lot of my feelings for the movie. So it's like, I try to remove the personal tragedy that is involved with the movie. And like, it's just fiction in my head, but it's messed up that it's all based. And they're just like, and you know, and Keeley will talk about it a little bit about how, you know, as crazy is the thing, the craziest thing that happened were true. Like, the only thing that was not something that was just kind of fluffed up for the script was the type of car Victor drove. Like that was.
I read somewhere that you know, they have those little like old school sports cars, and they just had to make them all convertibles because The Rock didn't fit.
Oh my gosh, that's so cute!
Isn't that nice?
That's so cute.
And then with the okay, well, all right, it's time to get into the stats, and then we'll get into
okay, yeah.
Let's have the factsy segment. Pain and Gain was released on April 26th, 2013, the 15th number one movie of that year. Won its opening weekend with $20.2 million, only narrowly beating the second weekend of Oblivion, a movie I forgot was not Elysium. I was ready to come on and be like, Oblivion, which we've already covered. No, not at all.
Oblivion has a great soundtrack, though.
Maybe it was good. Like,
no,
I don't
it's
know.
It's horrible. It's very, very bad.
There was a certain kind of mid-2010s sci-fi where, like, yeah. While I was watching it, I was like, yes, a sci-fi movie. And 4 minutes later, I was like, I don't know what that was about or what happened over the past 2 hours.
Exactly.
Like Elysium. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Also released the same weekend as Pain and Gain was The Big Wedding, just an old people having a nice time movie. It debuted in fourth with $7.5 million. And indie entry into the reconnaissance, Mud, which debuted in 11th with $2.2 million. Mud was pretty good.
Reconnaissance.
I own that movie and have never watched it. It was one of those iTunes 10 packs. It's like snuck in there with like Shakespeare in Love and Crash, other movies that I own and have never, I have seen them both, but never watched them since purchasing them.
Well, Crash is a difficult rewatch.
All right, we're going to not. We don't have time. We're on a schedule today.
We don't have time for Crash because
another day.
Pain and Gain dropped very quickly on the list. It was only a 1 week winner. The next weekend, it was demolished by the debuting Iron Man 3, which came out with a $174.1 million weekend. Pain and Gain fell to second, only made 7.5 in its sophomore frame. It was only in the top 10 for 4 weeks. It finished just shy of $50 million, only the 70th highest grossing film of that year. In fact, in that year, it only did two spots better than Jurassic Park. Not Jurassic World, Jurassic Park, which was re-released in 3D that year and made $45 million. The Pain and Gain had a budget of $35 million. It is the cheapest Michael Bay movie since his debut feature, Bad Boys. They kept it down because Bay, The Rock, and Mark Wahlberg all took points on the back end instead of a salary for the movie, which was a bad move for them. It is still the second cheapest Michael Bay movie. The only other low-budget movie he has done is 13 Hours, The Secret Soldiers of Benghazi, an Oscar nominee.
No, it wasn't. Its nomination was withdrawn.
Wait, what?
Yes, so I watched that movie because of the Oscars death race, and then at the 11th hour, its nomination was disqualified for some reason. I don't even know what. Rule-breaking of some kind.
It was one of the sound awards, right?
It was one of the sound awards. And I have never, like, I'll never get over the fact that I had to watch 13 hours The Secret Soldiers of Benghazi. For no, like, and I didn't really have to. I realized that I don't have like a blood oath to a demon or something to watch every Oscar nominated movie, but it
don't
feels
you?
Like
I mean, it would explain a lot about you personally. But yes, 13 hours was a little bit more expensive to make than Pain and Gain. And it made $2 million more than Pain and Gain. That's weird, because I don't remember 13 Hours at all. Pain and Gain made more domestic, or rather 13 Hours made more domestic than Pain and Gain, which means that Pain and Gain stands as the lowest grossing Michael Bay movie. That is what we have watched today.
I think that there was a built-in audience for 13 Hours of people who thought that they might get to go see a movie about how Hillary Clinton is a murderer.
Well, how big is that? Because wasn't there a literal documentary about that?
Yeah,
that
but
only
later,
made like
right?
$2 million?
Yeah, I don't know. That's true. And then also, what about his Netflix movie that came out last year? Where does that fit in the mix? I mean,
yeah,
the gross doesn't count there.
Yeah, among theatrical releases.
Okay.
That movie wasn't... Somehow that movie had a $150 million budget, which
my
is
gosh.
Like...
Because Netflix prints their own money.
Right.
Yeah. Netflix is going to buy everything at the end of this, because they must be doing great right now.
Oh, fuck yeah, they are.
And finally, IMDb trivia, which, take it with a grain of salt, reports the post-bulking up weight of our three stars in this movie. The filming weight for Mark Wahlberg was 212 pounds, which, by the way...
Is he short?
He's pretty short.
Yeah, okay. He's about my height, maybe a little shorter.
Mark Wahlberg.
You're not short.
For what you would imagine Mark Wahlberg to be like. So, like, if he's about my height, maybe a little bit shorter than me. So, like, to me, that's short for, you know, you, like, imagine Mark Wahlberg. I've been in the same place. I've been, like, eye to eye with him.
Oh, okay.
What? Where and why?
Wahlburgers. The opening of the Pittsburgh Wahlburgers. I was there for Donnie. Mark came through the crowd. I was still looking for Donnie. Like, hey, where's Donnie? Thanks, Mark. Hey, where's Donnie?
Is that
I was there for Donnie. It's the Camila Adams story.
Is that the Wahlburgers at what used to be Northway Mall on McKay Road?
Yes.
It's just weird that Mark Wahlberg was once in a place where I used to make out with people in the when I was 13. That's weird, no matter what the con. And Marky Mark, with a lot of bulk on him, looks like Hans and Franz from SNL, right?
Yes,
like,
this is.
Anyway. Mark Wahlberg at 212 pounds. Anthony Mackie at 213 pounds for the film. The Rock went to nearly 300 pounds in his muscle for pain.
Eight feet tall. Jeez.
Well, as a wrestler, you know, they announce your weight on the way to the ring. As a wrestler, The Rock was billed at 260 pounds. That's inflated. So that means he was probably wrestling in the 240s. So he gained 50 pounds of muscle for this.
Oh, my God.
Where did he put it?
All in his neck.
Yeah, right, most of his neck and shoulder region from the look of it. So, I didn't know where I was going with this movie. Like I said, there were moments that I liked. I think I turned on it when they did the slow motion close up of Tony Shalhoub getting tased, and he had like a phlegm explosion. Then I was like, no, I don't know anymore.
I found so much of their treatment of Tony Shalhoub's body revolting. Like, I really felt like a physical, like, chills when they were like really lingering on his head being smushed underneath the wheel of the car.
That was weird. And like Camila said, that was the true part of the movie. Like,
right.
I was on the Wikipedia immediately after finishing, and I was like, no, these guys crashed him in the car, and that didn't work, and then they set him on fire, and that didn't work, and then they ran him over with the car, and that they thought worked, but didn't. If you wrote that, you would be like, well, let's simplify. Come on.
You know, there's a lot of, it's interesting, I hope I never live this, but it really feels like that happens sometimes in real life. Like, people talk about Rasputin a lot, like, there just are some people out there who are hard
unkillable.
To kill, yes.
Well, yeah, and that, and what's kind of tripped out, like, I was Googling afterwards, after watching the movie, and the guy that it really happened to, the real Victor, whatever, but that's not his name, he, nobody ever contacted him. So this movie,
they made this movie script, without talking to the guy.
Yes, without talking to really anybody that it actually happened to. It was based on, and you'll see in the end credits, based on a series of articles that were written about the story, about what happened. So a lot of the people's families were understandably like perturbed by what had happened, and they also mentioned that the article that I read was that a lot of stuff, his treatment, a lot worse than what we saw on
of
film.
Of course.
Right.
Yeah. It's such a weird story to make into a movie, period.
Like, right.
Series of magazine articles, newspaper articles, that makes perfect sense. But, you know, as Ed Harris says in the final kind of summation, this is mainly a story about how these guys were so stupid that people ended up dying, you know, just by a weird combination of a self-help guru, a gym, and a little bit of like, where's my piece of the pie?
Right.
And it led to all these deaths. There's no, like, American narrative. There's no, like, greater meaning in here. This is just some crazy stuff that happened.
Exactly. And I'm so freaks. It trips me out to think they really tried to return that chainsaw to the Home Depot. Like, with blood and hair on it. Like, at what point are you just, like, you know, you really needed that, what, $75 that badly that she was like, you know.
They made it out to be like, it's the principle of the thing. This is a faulty product.
Made in China. Okay, so aside from, again, just like the personal loss that was taken in the true story, there are several scenes that I'm just like, that crack me the fuck up. And like, and I love watching The Rock because he's so big and bulky. You don't expect him to be funny, really, or any of them, really, because, you know, I'm really used to seeing Anthony Mackie and just like more serious. I'm the big shot, blah, blah, blah. I'm a tough guy roles.
So poorly suited for.
Right.
He's so much better. Like, I think he's great as Falcon, but yeah. Like, he is in his element in a movie like this where he's a little bit pathetic.
Right. Like the strip club scene where he just turns to The Rock and is like, is that breast milk?
Yeah.
wasn't he the third in like a wacky holiday comedy?
Yeah, the one where they all are sad. They all grieve. I never watched this, weirdly, but it's a movie about grief on Christmas. It's a comedy about grief on Christmas. It's like it was made for me.
It's
my
Seth
father
Gordon.
Died on Christmas. And it's Seth Rogen.
I just said Seth Gordon. I turned the cast of 50-50 into one person. Seth Rogen and Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
But I right. think Joseph Gordon-Levitt might also be in it.
He is.
Yeah.
It's the one that like the last Christmas or something.
Yeah. Something. No, that's the
That's the one with the
Is it the night before?
Yeah.
Was the night before, maybe?
Yeah. I can't remember whether or not that's a good movie. I do remember that I love the scene where one of them is trying to get back together with his girlfriend and they end up at a Miley Cyrus show and they get Miley to help him propose on stage and she's just like, no, this was a terrible, humiliating idea, and I'm angry that you did it. Like, this is a nice corrective to the while you were sleeping of the
right.
world.
Yeah.
I love the cast of Pain and Gain. Like, there's almost no one here I didn't like, and I really liked Ed Harris in it. I'm kind of so-so on Mark Wahlberg all the time, but I thought he was fine here. The Rock right. was great. Anthony Mackie was great. Rebel Wilson, always 100% herself and nothing else, but
right.
funny.
Playing a character named Robin. I always like hearing my own name.
I could take Rebel in these doses. Like, she was only in, there were only like several, just sprinklings yeah. of her.
You are exactly right. Like, I actually really like her. I think she's very funny, but this is the exact right amount of deployment for a Rebel Wilson.
Right. Did you know that she's actually she's a lawyer?
No, but that makes sense. It
Does
sounds
it?
Like something.
Because I was floored. Like, when Dan told me, I was like, Rebel Wilson?
I'll tell you why it makes sense, because she's not a likely movie star,
right?
So right. It's sort of like she sideways stumbled into being a movie star, and so she had to do normal person things, like get a law degree.
Exactly.
Tony Shalhoub, is he charming? I can't tell.
I don't find him charming.
So I like him. I think that I thought that the TV show Monk was like, just a perfect confluence of character and actor, where like that was exactly what he should be doing, and it was the perfect way for him to exercise his talents. And because it worked so well, I do think that there was a period of time where people were like, Tony Shalhoub is a great actor, and they asked him to do things that he is not quite capable of doing. And I think that this movie is an example of that, although this was several years after Monk ended. But yeah, I think it's just pushing, it's straining his charmingness to the breaking point. Like, he's not charming enough for this role.
No, absolutely not. He's no Ed Harris. I tell
no,
you
Ed
what.
Ed Harris was like, great in
this. It was delightful. I had forgotten he was in it. And it was like, oh shit, there's Ed Harris. And you know what? Like, the man is like, what? Like 85 years old or something? and absolutely looking it. And I'm still like, you know what? You can still get it, Ed.
And then he has that, like, 40-year-old wife who just brings right. him cool drinks and compliments him.
Right.
What a movie character she was.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
I mean, I think that a lot of the issues beyond the subject matter and the script and just the weird tone were Michael Bay related. Like, I like Michael Bay movies sometimes when it's like right in the things that he is good at, but here it was just like, a lot of it was like showy direction and design yeah. and like loud scores and bold choices that didn't work.
It's
right.
Admittedly, I did not know this was a Michael Bay movie, and I was surprised when the title credit came up. I was floored, like literally paused and slack-jawed when I saw that Christopher Marcus and Stephen McFeely wrote it, the guys who wrote the Captain America movies and Endgame, because first of all, very different tone from the Captain America movies. And additionally, just like less competent screenwriting. You know, for wherever you stand on Marvel, I think that Infinity War and Endgame are two movies where it's like, wow, they put so much content into an admittedly very long runtime, but they really do a lot of like elegant things storytelling wise to create this incredibly epic tale.
Right.
And then they have this relatively simple story of Florida man dot, dot, dot that they stretch out into almost 2.5 hours of nonsense in this movie.
Well, it definitely didn't have to be 2.5 hours, basically, or whatever. Like, this should have been cut down like 140, maybe tops.
Right.
But like, I think kind of, I might be giving the script a little bit too much credit, but it does kind of, it's chaotic. That's the way the story is told. And I'm thinking maybe it's just because that's just the way that we're supposed to be feeling this chaos that is happening around them, because shit was like just went sideways almost immediately.
Right.
And it's just like all over the place. And there's like so many different people's versions of the story. So much is happening, you know, like, you know, Anthony Mackie's character, he's like living the best life ever. But like, you know, on the flip side, you know, The Rock's character, he comes in as this hardcore Christian, but then like ends up downward spiral. And it's just, and Mark, he's like, serving, doing his, like, you know, he just wants to mow his lawn, and he's like serving the kids like the basketball game. Like, the scene is like, stop eyeballing me, I'll be your stepfather by the weekend.
Oh, it was a role for him. They all, in somewhat unlikely ways, it was a good role for all of them. With The Rock, I loved his like, I hate lying, but I'm so good at it thing. Right. Like, where, like, he's always like, don't make me bear false witness. And then he goes into a perfectly believable improvisation of whatever's going on. It's
exactly.
Well, Camila, I just want you to praise this movie. So we go out on that note, and because you're the one that did enjoy it.
I do have one criticism I do need to get in under the wire. This movie has such lazy period work. Like, if you were not paying attention at the point where they said that this was set in 1994, you would never, ever know.
I was not paying attention.
I did not see that.
Yep. It's set in 1994. When they show Anthony Mackie and Rebel Wilson's wedding, and she's got a little short wedding dress, and her bridesmaids have, like, a ruffle going up, I'm like, oh, that is a 2012 wedding dress, my friend. I know.
There's no way I would have ever thought about that.
No one would wear that in 1994. It's just lazy. It's lazy. And why not get cheap jokes in on the 90s?
Yeah, this is true. Okay.
Sorry.
It's fine. Is it time to go ahead? And I mean, okay. So again, like, you know, it's just this, there's so much good comedy in this film that I just really, I was laughing throughout it. And it's so fun for me to see people like Anthony Mackie, The Rock, and Mark Wahlberg, who are typically serious actors. Well, maybe not The Rock, but to just see them do this comedic genius just so subtly. And it's just like, you know, just goes in there. The relationship between The Rock and Tony Shalhoub, like Pepe and Eldad, like that whole thing, it's so freaking adorable. It's so cute. And I just fucking love it. And I also, like, sometimes I am a real, like, easy target for a lot of the fast edits and, like, the quick editing and a lot of Michael Bay's, what he's good at. Just, like, the highly saturated color of all of his films. And, you know, even, there wasn't a lot of stuff blowing up in this, which is why probably it was a lower, you know, because it was a lower budget film. But it was cool. But again, like, it could have been shorter. We could have tightened it up a bit, because there was a point at the end I'm like, okay, we really don't need to be here to do this again. Let's move it on. Let's tie this up.
Let's rate it, and let's climb the numbers to better set up our guest's appearance. So we're going to end on positive notes. So we're going to start with Robin.
Exactly.
Robin. Okay, so I do want to say that actually, in preface of our guest, I thought that she was great. There are moments in this movie that I laughed at and enjoyed, and I do completely agree with what you are all saying about how the actors really did, they gave it their all. So as much as I strongly dislike this movie, my rating is maybe not as low as you might guess. I'm going to give it a 39.
All right. 39. I'm higher than that. Listen, I said...
That was my generous rating.
Yes. You know, a whole 38 spots above zero. It's fine. I meant what I said. I didn't know if this was good or not, and thus I gave it a 50.
I was expecting that.
It is my first shrug of a rating. It is exactly even. Camila?
This movie is a fun time for me. I actually bought it after I finished watching it, so it's 87.
Holy cow!
We're gonna look at where that lands on your overall charts during the interview you're about to hear, but that is higher than I thought. An 87 from Camila. That gets us to an average score of 58. 58 and 2/3. But then I'm extra glad that you are the one to be conducting this interview. we now take you, for the first time in the history of the number one movie in America, to an interview with one of the stars of Pain and Gain. Here is Camila's interview with Keeley Lefkowitz.
All right, Keeley. So it just so happens, as luck would have it, for the show, for our podcast, the number one movie in America, we just so happen to randomly pick, and this is how we do it. We just pick movies that have been number one in the box office, and we do have a random generator. And Pain and Gain was the one that came up for this week. When I told Dan, he was super stoked. He's like, oh, because we'd seen it once before, and we both liked the movie anyway. And he's like, you know, my friend Keeley is in this movie. And I'm like, that's awesome. So, yeah, as luck would have it, we have a connection. And so, you know, I want to get into you. Like, you, it was a very interesting role that you got to play.
I'll tell you, though, you know, we read a lot of scripts. And I read this script. And every once in a while, you read something. And you're like, that's, you know, I'm really interested in that. I really like this. I read that script. And I was like, whoever gets to do this is going to have a blast. So they stuck to it, you know, pretty verbatim from the time that I wrote it. Or I read it. And we shot it, which a lot of times there's all sorts of, you know, generations that it'll go through. But they stuck with it. And it is a very particular role. It is interesting because there were a lot of people I hadn't seen from high school in a long time. And they're like, what is going on with your sweet rap? And I can always tell when it's airing because I get all sorts of calls from prison. Or emails or a big contingent in the Middle East. And let me tell you something, I'm very grateful. I'll take it. It's wonderful. Where did you get those, you know?
Right.
Sweet.
Sweet rack.
Sweet rack. Yeah. Which, you know, I'll just be flat out with you. No pun intended. I am not small busted. I was in high school, but I was a late bloomer. And
oh,
then,
wow.
I mean, literally, I dated a guy in high school that carried on to college, but I didn't see him for 6 months. And I saw him and he was like, what the hell happened? So it wasn't until college that I sort of did. But just in all fairness, they had me wearing like 67 bras and like and all sorts of stuff. And
literally just shoved up to your throat.
It's interesting because, you know, she was a real gal.
Yeah. And I don't know if that was just, you know, you bringing your personality to the role, if she was just written as such. But I mean, you want to hang out with. I wanted to hang out with her.
And here we are.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yes. I definitely looked into as much information I could find on her.
Porn Queen Wives.
But, you know, at a certain point, you got to just bring yourself. But it's tricky because it's not just portraying some chick. It's a chick that passed like in a really, really raunchy, sad, you know, violent way. And and unfortunately, you know, the family they were not a fan of the film, which I understand.
Right. You know? So I didn't realize that her character was actually a real person in the tragedy that had occurred.
Oh, listen, let me tell you something. So strangely, like I said, when I read this script, I really loved it. But I read it and I was like, this sounds familiar. The story sounds familiar. Then I looked it up and I remember I was like, I saw like a Dateline for 2020. And I was like, that's the story. And so it was very interesting. And so the more that I studied and the more that I read in the script, I have to tell you, this script does not deviate hardly at all from the real story. Like the more
really, the holy cats.
the more absurd, the more farcical, the more true. What they did, you know, with Home Depot and then true. So I want to say that, like, one of the things that was, you know, maybe pumped up a little bit was, like, you know, Tony Shalhoub's character's car. I think in the film they gave him maybe like a BMW. I don't remember. But in real life, it was like a 4Runner. You know what I mean?
So that's what they bolstered.
But honestly, everything else is flat out true.
It is a crazy story, and it's amazing. I enjoy myself a dark comedy.
Me too.
And also, you know, you've got the action. And it's probably like the least Michael Bay Michael has ever bayed. But, you know, it all works. And, you know, the team, the entire cast, yourself included, brings these amazing comedic chops to the role. But yet, you know, the drama is all still there.
Well, first of all, Michael's funny. He had a great sense of humor and he was very interested and open to what other people wanted to bring. In fact, I never met him for my audition. It was a tape audition sent in from casting. They had been looking to cast and do this piece. He had been looking to do this piece for a decade.
Oh, wow.
Paramount kept saying, yeah, we'll give you that one. Just give us a couple of Transformers. They're like, he's like, okay, I gave you a couple of Transformers. Now here's Pain and Gain. They're like, yeah, just one more. And he's like, yeah. So it was really important to him to get the story told. Mm-hmm. And he's just one of those directors that hires people to just do their job. Mm. And so the first day that I met him, he's like, you're going to do that Jersey thing, right? Because she's not written as Jersey. In fact, she's from Hungary, which is why at one point, I think in the shower with Wahlberg, I have some random Hungarian thing.
Yeah.
Threw at me like about an hour before my scene. They're like, we have you on the phone with some linguistics gal. Can you learn some Hungarian? I was like, no, not. And I was like, whatever, just scribbling down as much as I possibly can and like trying to like die and pass out in the shower with Wahlberg and throw in a couple of, you know, typical Hungarian phrases. He did hire some great people, and we loved doing this piece.
And I'm sure, like, you know, most women's question is, you know, as superficial as it would be. First of all, you're riding Falcon, you know, Anthony Mackie. You're like, you're riding him like a pony.
Yeah. Yep.
So there's that. Exactly. You get choked out by The Rock Johnson.
I'll take it. Right. The nicest dude on the planet, by the way.
He seems like it. He really does. And then you've got Maki Mock, you know, in his Calvin Klein's, just like kind of hovering all over you.
Just get to shoot at him. It's just there's nothing nerve-wracking about just shooting a gun right at Marky Mark's face and just say 3-2-1 action, and it's just the most normal, natural day at work. Ever. So I was like, if I do something wrong and I, you know, if I kill him, right, there's going to be a problem.
There would have been repercussions. There would have been a big problem. And not just with the law. There, you would have had like millions.
I think there'd have been problems. No, and you know what? But those dudes, they're pros. They are all very funny, very good at what they do, but they all are there to have fun.
Do you have any memorable like moments from the set aside from everything?
Interestingly enough, the guy who plays Frank has become like my nearest and dearest.
Really?
Yeah. And so I got his number from someone on set, and I was like, listen, I'm getting ready to come, you know, in a couple of days, and I'd love to connect with him. You know, we're supposed to be a couple. I'd like to, you know, as like a method actress, I was like, I really want to try to like, you know, create some affinity between us and some love. And I was like, yeah, call him. His name is Michael Rispoli. He's going to be really, you know, he's what a great dude. In fact, before that, when I booked the role, my manager called me and he was like, you booked this, congratulations. You're going to be shooting down in Miami for this long. And he's like, your husband played by Michael Rispoli. I was like, Michael Imperioli? I'm sorry. No, not Michael Imperioli. Michael Rispoli. I was like, who the hell is this dude? Also from Sopranos.
Right.
Now that I know him, he's in everything. He's been one of my favorite human beings on the planet. Great guy. Married, three children, just a coach of Little League. But anyway, so I called him, left a message the next day. He texted me. He's like, I'm flying this day too. Let me know when you land. I landed, and within an hour, we were together, met at a hotel in a safe space, and, started drinking our faces off and connected. And from that point forward, we went fishing, and we just really sort of like built, like I said, just, you know, kind of put some layers in, you know, and put together our little souffle of relationship. 80% of our stuff got cut anyhow. But we had a great time. Mackie is as fun as you want him to be. He is hysterical.
Yeah, I wouldn't have, prior to seeing this movie, I would never have, I had forgotten, you know, because I saw it years ago. And then, you know, he shows up now, he's in Marvel. But, you know, I had forgotten, like, how funny he actually is.
Funny first. In fact, this is hysterical. As I am talking to you, I wish you could see this.
Oh, my God. He, like, it was like you talked him up. He could hear. He felt that he was being spoken about.
I'm telling you, he just told me a squirrel jumped on my lawn tractor and looked at me. Thank you. Thank you for that. I'm telling you, he's like a farmer. He has, like, 5-8 acres. He's building like flower boxes right now. It's hysterical.
I love it because he always plays just these hardcore gangster roles, no. Except for like another movie that we reviewed that he was in was While You Were Sleeping.
Oh,
and
oh God, one of the best roles ever. And he's that silly. So as silly as Muscoli is in that movie, Anthony Mackie is in life with the rest of his stuff. He's really silly. We spent the most time hanging out and talking, kind of in a scene that really got edited away, but we were laying down right before I was almost dead, like 3/4 dead,
right,
laying down, and we're sitting there talking, and we were talking about he was like, so you played Monster in Malibu's Most Wanted, and I was like, oh geez, and he was like, I wanted to be in that movie so badly because he had done 8 Mile.
Oh wow.
So anyway, that's how he and I started talking, and he is a bunch of fun and trouble in the best way, in a nice and harmless way, but really a great, great dude. Like I said, The Rock is the most disciplined person I think I've ever come across. He would be eating like to the T when it was like a bell would ring and someone would come in with some bento box and he would just go to town, do some push-ups, and then go in. But he was doing, I felt, in this film, very different work than I had ever seen him do before. And I thought that he was excellent. Wahlberg is just a wonderful shit stirrer and just a blast. He would get up at like 3 a.m. and work out and go to set, have a long day, and then sleep for like 3 to 4 minutes and then come back and do the same thing, gym. Michael Bay never slept. He would shoot all day long and then go back and edit nonstop. Right. And we shot in Bay's house, the house that.
I read that.
That's his house, which used to be Hulk Hogan's house. Interesting enough.
Nice.
And it's a nice spread.
Yeah, to say the least. I mean, you know, if you like that sort of thing. How did you get into acting? I noticed you've got quite the filmography. I haven't seen Malibu's Most Wanted, but now that I know that you're in it, I am going to make sure to watch that. And I've seen the photos, and I really want to see what happened.
You know, I started acting, I think, because my mom, I mean, your husband could tell you, my mom was an actress back in the Midwest. She had her own series. It was like a morning talk show. And so she would do like a segment and then show Leave It to Beaver and then come in and do like a cooking thing and then have an interview and interview like Richard Harris or something incredible.
Wow.
4-hour show, and she was always a badass to me, still is, but she was writing, producing, directing, cutting, and preparing the day before, and mommying.
That's awesome.
Way back when everybody else's mom was kind of like doing, you know, lunches.
Right.
So I always was very inspired by a working mom, but she had my brother and I doing things ever since we were little. Not she had us, but we would do commercials or voiceovers or whatever. And then my brother and I would make movies that were just awful. I always had the bug.
Yeah. And when did you decide to make the plunge and be like, all right, I'm going to go out to L.A. or New York? Where did you start?
I went to University of Missouri and I studied theater there. It was time for me to graduate and I pulled out of a hat that I'm going to L.A.
Wow.
It was like L.A., Chicago, or New York. And I was like, I guess I'm going to L.A. So about a few weeks after I graduated, I was here. That was it. And I happened to have a relationship with a gal whose since passed, who's amazing, Phyllis Huffman. And so I worked for her as, you know, just I interned for her. She was a casting director for Clint Eastwood. And so I worked over there at Warner Brothers for a while, kind of learning the system. And it, that was very helpful just to see actors come in and audition and how to audition and what to do and what not to do.
Right.
And Clint Eastwood's vibe was incredible. I learned so much from him.
That's amazing. That's like top of the notch, man. Like for real.
So that was like, and I got lucky. I came out here and I got an agent about my first week, which doesn't happen.
Damn.
It doesn't happen. And then I booked my first job in my first couple of months. And then another one after 6 months. I've done like about 11 pilots that are nowhere near on my IMDb because none of them got picked up.
Right.
So, and then I didn't work for a while. I did theater and I worked on a musical piece, a rock opera for a long time that's been like 20 years or so.
Do you sing?
I do sing.
I'm assuming you also write?
Yeah.
Yeah. Are you a dancer as well?
I would not qualify myself as a dancer, but I can move. I was a professional gymnast for a long time, for like, you know, 20 some years, and a cheerleader. It's a tour around.
Wow. You have quite the career. You've lived quite the life thus far.
It's been something. I'll knock on wood. But yeah.
Was there a role that you haven't had yet that you are just dying to play a certain character? Or
Yes, there is something. I'm writing it.
Oh, yes. Yes. That's what you do.
And that's what you do. I'm creating. Yeah, you really just, you can't wait for the phone to ring or your agent's call or anything like that. So you got to go out there and you got to create. I study at a place called Richard Lawson Studios. Been with Richard Lawson for a very long time. You would know him if you saw him. You'd be like, oh my God, he's been in everything as well. He's married to Tina Knowles. Beyonce.
Oh, okay.
So,
yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. Now I know you're talking.
There's profit and nonprofit. There's the Where Art Can Occur. It's like the Waco side and the Richard Lawson Studios. And I take there and I teach there. But one of the things that we really talk about is just that Hollywood is plan B.
Mm-hmm.
So if you create your own stuff, you know, hopefully that is kind of come to you. So I'm writing something that I don't know that I could say.
Okay.
It's not at all something that is not, because it's based on a true story.
Oh, okay.
So based on a true story.
Yeah, just to know that you're out there doing what you're supposed to be doing. You know, you're making it happen for yourself.
You got to make it happen. I mean, my husband and I, we just sold a script with Richard for an animated feature through Indie.
Congratulations.
Well, no, I say it. I'm always saying it because, like, we didn't know we really animated. And we were like, well, let's just create this and try that and blah, blah, blah. And bought some, you know, some of the technical stuff that we needed to do. And then, boom, we're like, I guess we're going to follow that. You never know. And I'm telling you, during quarantine, we're finding all sorts of things that we didn't know that we were interested in doing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, and that's one of the, like, once we all come out of this, like, there's going to be, you know, a crop of folks who are just like, you know, thank God this is over. But, like, there's going to be a lot of people that have discovered a lot of new talents and skills about themselves and learned all this new stuff. So hopefully I'm in that second crop that is just creating, just trying to create as much as possible.
Yeah.
All right. Well, so thank you so much for your time. It was amazing to talk to you. Is there anything we should be looking out for specifically for you? Like, you want to shout out anything that you can talk about?
I have a film I'm getting ready to shoot. We're now on hold because we're not really sure when that's happening.
Right.
But I have to make sure that I tell you so that you can, you know, give it a old shout out. I just had a film called From Zero to I Love You. It's now on Amazon
Prime.
That's what it is.
All right.
Zero to I Love You, which we actually shot in Philly.
Okay, nice.
Got some of it in Philly. It was a film that took a short 5 years. But it just came out on video, so that I would shout out. And I'll let you know anything else that's coming along. I got a bunch of stuff I'm working on. It's just going to take a little bit of time.
Yeah, as the creative process does. Thank you so much, Keely.
Welcome. So good to meet you.
You too.
And we're back and we're looking at the overall charts, and the only movies that Camila enjoyed more than Pain and Gain were Speed and Ocean's 11.
Holy
Are we detecting a pattern here?
Listen, I just gave Crimson Tide 1,000 or whatever it was. Like, you gotta go with what works for you. I'm glad that one of us was that high on it, and sincere thanks to Keely Lefkowitz for doing that.
Yeah, that's so cool. Awesome. And like I said, she truly was delightful in this. Yes. And I haven't listened to, we're recording this without me having listened to that segment yet. Does she address the weirdness of playing a murder victim? That's like the only thing I could think about, because she became a real person to me because I knew that you had interviewed her. I was like, oh, wow, like you have to think about your body being dismembered.
We didn't get that deep into it. Okay. But yeah, that's, yeah.
The next time we contact a murder victim to be on the show.
We'll make sure that'll be number one question.
Let's go to the number one movie in America bingo card. I know that we have a couple of pieces because certainly based on a true story.
Yes.
Oh yeah,
for sure.
I forgot that was on here.
Do we count it as a heist? Is it a heist or a scheme?
I think it should count as a heist.
There were a lot of physical items actually being stolen.
I agree. I think it's a heist.
So close.
Yeah, cross off based on a true story and heist. I don't think it counts as a biopic. We're not trying to learn more about I don't think anyone learned the error of their ways. We keep coming close to that space and not getting.
What about The Rock's character?
He did go back to being a Christian. Like he was saved again.
But
born again.
He had already learned the error of his ways, briefly forgot them, and then relearned them.
Okay.
That doesn't mean that he didn't do it, though.
It's a judgment call. I will leave it up to the two of you.
I have to recuse myself, because if he did learn the error of his ways, I get bingo.
Oh.
Then it's up to Camila.
Ah, did The Rock learn the error of his ways? I'm going to go with yes.
Ooh, that's a bingo.
It's a bingo.
Yay.
Boom. Whoa! Look, right from behind.
I know. I have been a Marvel movie away from bingo. I am now an 80s movie away from bingo, and a biopic away from. Oh man! Well done with this.
I know. I was a coming of age away and a gambling away.
Camila, what happens now? Are you going to make new cards?
Yes, I will make new cards and send them to you and put them on the Twitter.
What's right. Interesting now, by the prize, and we'll decide if we want to change the prize for the second round of bingo, Robin now has two vetoes, which currently are all of the vetoes left for 2020.
Right.
Because I refuse to watch Transformers and Camila refused to watch Beavis and Butthead Do America. Robin pretty much has the run of the show now.
It's all up to you, Robin.
All
no
right,
pressure.
Robin, who is notoriously easy to issue a veto.
No, last year you vetoed from hell just to see what would happen. And if it hadn't been that, I don't know if you would have ever used it.
I'm worried that something worse will happen.
Like The Hangover Part 2. We
exactly.
remember.
Exactly, yeah. Now that I have two, I feel so powerful. Okay, so great. New bingo card. Hooray.
Given the extra segment, we know we're already going long on you, so let's do the lightning round of You Can't Handle the Truth. What is everyone streaming, and what should they be aware of? Robin?
So something I should have talked about last week but forgot to was the documentary Waking Sleeping Beauty, which is on Disney Plus, and it is about the Disney Renaissance. First of all, it's just a very enjoyable documentary, but it was also fascinating to watch right after our conversation about Ants and Jeffrey Katzenberg, because in that episode I said, you know, Jeffrey Katzenberg was in charge of Disney animation during the Disney Renaissance. Waking Sleeping Beauty basically takes the approach that he was in charge of Disney animation in name only and was a meddler and obnoxious. And Roy Disney, of all people, is set up as this like paragon of integrity. And it just was so different from the narrative that I believed. Now, I don't know if it's true. It is very difficult to believe a documentary on Disney Plus about Disney history.
Sure.
And there are certain things that like are in that documentary that just are like moving along, like John Lasseter is in the background and they're just like, I think this probably came out before the news was there on John Lasseter. And like, they're like, Don Bluth left. Like, they don't talk about Don Bluth leaving. And so anyway, but if you're at all interested in the history of animation, I highly recommend that documentary. It's very good. And then also, I don't really want to talk about it, but I do want to talk about how it was interesting that watching Pain and Gain the same week as Tiger King. Did you guys watch that?
I refuse.
Yeah, you're making the right choice. And hopefully, like, by next week of quarantine, Tiger King will be forgotten. And when this episode comes out, people will be like, oh, yeah. But it is all of the craziest parts are true thing.
I'm not very even sure. Is it a documentary or is it a
documentary series? So it's like six episodes of documentary. And the footage, a lot of it comes from they were making a reality series about him.
Okay.
And then also he's just the kind of guy who like recorded his own life and like had his own web show and stuff. It's, listen, I don't want to say I enjoyed it. It's fascinating. It is impossible to stop watching, but it makes you feel bad at the end.
Right.
You know, and also like you watch animals being abused. So
it seems about, yeah.
I know for a lot of people, that's a total deal breaker. So,
right. Yeah. There's no way I can't do that. Yeah.
But it was just interesting parallels to Pain and Gain. So that's why I brought it up.
Right. Speaking of interesting parallels, look at the website of your local independent movie theater. If you don't have one near you or don't have one that you care about, or you're in Pittsburgh, make that rowhousecinema.com. Rowhouse not only is doing a virtual screening system during quarantine, they were innovators in it. They actually have like helped to guide other movie theaters around the country through doing this.
Nice.
Where you go to the website and you buy a one-time ticket for a new release that isn't anywhere else on streaming, something that would have been in specialty, you know, art houses, either something from around the world or a documentary or an independent movie, and a portion of that virtual ticket price still goes to that independent cinema and helps them stay alive during the shutdown, as opposed to, you know, we're all watching Netflix, we're all watching Disney Plus. That money is going to the big corporations, which, you know, fine, but, you know, make a little bit of time for the little guy in your neighborhood. And if you don't have one you like, Row House Cinema is a good choice. As you're hearing this, one of this week's selections is a movie called The Traitor from Italy. It was Italy's submission for Best International Film this year. And I think part of the reason why it did not get nominated is it's really close to The Irishman, kind of.
Oh, like, wow.
It's a 2.5-hour mafia movie about a guy who, you know, obviously in The Irishman he did not flip, but this is a guy that turned on the Sicilian mafia in the 1980s. And it's another one that's kind of about how the back half of a life in crime is not too pleasant and fun. It's a really interesting companion piece to The Irishman and very, very well done and well performed. If you like organized crime narratives, it's nice to see one that isn't, that never mentions the American dream, because your independent cinemas are hurting. So kick a little of your entertainment money that way. I also keep plugging Shudder. New on Shudder is a movie called Daniel Isn't Real, starring Patrick Schwarzenegger, Arnold's son, who's an actor. Didn't know that.
I don't think I knew that.
He's skinny and doesn't have an accent.
Like, oh, okay. So
right.
So there's only so far that career is going to go.
Yeah. He's good, though. He was very good. He is very, you know, he did inherit, you know, an easy, like, I am commanding this scene right now kind of a sensibility. You know, it's not a groundbreaking horror movie. It's one of those, does this guy have a voice in his head, or is that a demon that has possessed him kind of a narrative? Okay. But it's well done and interesting and a little bit trippy and a nice, the perfect Shudder exclusive. And I love Shudder. It's their halfway to Halloween month just started as I'm recording this, where they dropped the first 8 Friday the 13th.
Oh, so snap.
There's something to binge. And they're doing a docuseries, like an episodic docuseries called Cursed Movies on movies that supposedly had a troubled, like, the first episode.
I am there.
Okay. We get to Poltergeist. Yeah.
I feel like that alone, I don't like horror movies, and I feel like that alone might make me subscribe to Shudder.
That's, yeah, I'm so there. That's awesome.
3 months with the code shut in. And,
there we go.
And it's like $5 a month. You'll forget you're even a subscriber after that. So.
Yeah. How are we, should probably figure out how to get them as a sponsor.
They sponsor, like, I know a number of, like, less popular podcasts that they sponsor, so let's look into that and at least get some Shudder swag. Camila, right. what has been on the TV over there during
mostly Scandal, but I did watch I watched The Invisible Man, which I was very excited to see that movie, and it did not disappoint. I don't know for a fact, is it supposed to be part of like Universal's reboot of
Dark
their
Universe.
Monsters? Yeah, is it supposed to be like, because if so, I really enjoy the way that they're doing it, like reimagining of their Universal monsters, because, you know, it's not like, you know, so it could be really hokey trying to, like, you know, have a film about a scary invisible man. But the way that this is done is, and the way that they, it's like gaslighting on acid, you know? So it's just like the way that is the story is told and the way that parallel it with the domestic violence situation that she's in. I think it was beautifully done. It scared me at times for reasons other than the jump scares, and, you know, it's a lot of back and forth, but I thought it was really good. And Elizabeth Moss was awesome, and the ending was superb.
Fully agree. It is not, so they are not trying to connect all of these. Like they're not, that's what they were doing with The Mummy, and then everyone hated it and they stopped. Like, they are not going to have Elizabeth Moss walk into a Frankenstein movie in that character 3 years from now. But they want to keep bringing back those properties in this way as standalone movies, but more in this mode. So
I think that that's a smart move. And I think it, you know, it'll work. And I forget, it was Lee. What? I don't know how to pronounce his last name.
Lee Whannell.
He directed and wrote this one, right?
Yeah.
I love him.
He's great.
And next goal is to try to get him on the podcast.
Yeah. Why the hell not?
Moving on up.
All right.
Robin, have you watched Invisible Man yet? Still no.
No, still no. Because I like want to watch it in the right mood. I don't want to like ruin it for me, you know? So I...
What is the right mood?
I want to not be too scared to enjoy it.
Okay.
But also be able to pay attention to it. So those have been the two, like, I've had nights when I'm like, I won't be able to pay attention to it. And I have nights where I'm like, this will freak me out and I won't sleep.
Gotcha. Okay.
One of these weeks, we are going to celebrate Robin's having finally watched Invisible Man.
Yeah.
Let's draw a movie. And Robin has all the freedom in the world to veto it, but maybe we won't have to. Maybe there will be a cast member. Well, we're going to the 80s.
All right.
What's Teachers?
I have no idea.
I don't know. Is that like Matt?
What year
Matthew
is it?
Dillon?
It's 1984, so that's recent enough that this should be a legitimate number one movie.
I've never heard of this.
Teachers is a 1984 American satirical comedy drama.
Holy shit! It's Nick Nolte.
With Nick Nolte, Joe Beth Williams, Ralph Macchio, and Judd Hirsch.
Yay, Ralph Macchio!
All right. Looks like it's only available on Vudu.
All right.
I look forward to finding out what the hell this is.
What?
Why does Nick Nolte look like that he should be on the prairie somewhere?
He
like,
really
whatever.
Does.
None of the three of us have ever heard of this movie. That's exciting.
This is
great. It is. This will be interesting.
Who from this movie can be on our show?
Judd
Ralph Macchio.
Can we get Ralph Macchio to Skype in next week?
I'm going to try.
Probably not going to have a cast member from Teachers on this show next week, but wouldn't it be exciting if we did?
Exactly.
All right. Before, I know this is a long episode. Before we get out of here, I have a quarantine surprise for the two of you. I'm abandoning the albums concept.
Oh, wow.
Oh, hallelujahs.
It just wasn't like... This was like the fourth one in a row where I was like, nobody's even going to know any of these songs. It was a self-titled Paramore album, but like not even the one that has one of the three maybe recognizable Paramore songs on it.
Albums don't exist anymore.
Yeah.
Right?
What was the number one song in America when Pain and Gain was released on April 26, 2013?
Blurred Lines.
Blurred Lines was all over that year. I think Blurred Lines was the number one song of the year, but it was not this particular weekend.
Was this the Take Me to Church era?
Who's Take Me to Church?
Hozier. It was like Hozier. This song about fucking.
Hozier?
Yeah.
Is it? I didn't realize that's what it was about.
It's like Hallelujah. It's a song about fucking that sounds like it's about Jesus. Yeah.
This was one of those years with very few number one songs. Blurred Lines was most of the weeks. Royals was a lot of the weeks. Wrecking Ball was a lot of weeks.
Oh, yeah.
It's not Wrecking Ball. And this is one of the most short-lived by this female pop star.
Katy Perry?
Nope. A longer-reigning female pop star.
Longer-reigning? Madonna?
But less longer-reigning than Madonna.
Britney?
I don't think Britney.
Same debut era, probably, as Britney.
I don't know.
Christina Aguilera?
Maybe a year or two later.
This is going nowhere fast. Lady Gaga.
Before Lady Gaga, she has a one-word name.
Sierra? Rihanna?
No. She has a one-syllable name.
What?
Sia? No, that's two syllables.
I brought back the song game, and you got nothing.
I know. You do us this a favor.
This is a song by Pink.
Oh! Try? Blow Me a Kiss?
No. And this is one of those songs that you may never have known who was doing it. It is Pink's Just Give Me a Reason featuring...
That was a big song. Yeah.
It was a big... But if you had told me who does that song, I would have said... Kelly Clarkson, Miley Cyrus? not going to make any playlist. Camila, you got another playlist? Tell everyone about your latest playlist.
My latest playlist is Whiskey on the Back Porch. It's just... I think it's mostly like a lot of Southern Gothic rock songs.
Good.
It's just songs that make me think about drinking whiskey on the back porch, because that's the only place most of us are doing our drinking these days. On the back porch, or on the couch, or on the front porch, or in bed, or in the shower crying. It doesn't matter. Right. So please enjoy the Whiskey on the Back Porch Spotify playlist.
Let's listen to that while we figure out what Teachers is.
Number one movie in America.